Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 6, season 7. It's good to be back. Now, at this point, right, normally we'd say hello Jack and hello Ryan. We are going to do that bit in a minute, but we're kind of in this bizarre world of kind of no man's land. Between rallies, there isn't a lot going on, but there's still loads for us to discuss, which is why I do have on my left Jack Bennion. Hello, Jack Bennion.
Hello, Tony Simpson.
And hello, Ryan Champion.
Hello, Tony Simpson and Jack Bennion.
Now, before we go any further, I've got a great any other business this week. Following on from what Ryan did last week, because I listened to the show back, and I always say this purely for quality purposes, but Ryan's any other business was cracking, and Jack, you really did sound like you fell over in that alleyway. Just for the record,
weak at the knees.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you in any kind of back alley this week?
No.
No? Okay.
I'm in the office kitchen.
Of course, you're in the office kitchen. Ryan Champion, where are you?
I'm sat at my desk at home,
surrounded by your models, and some
surrounded by my models.
And
yeah,
some of them are not even cars, because that's the world
exactly,
that Ryan Champion lives in. Right, boys, we're gonna catch straight on. We're gonna go straight into MN as we always do. A couple of pages on this week because there's other things happening. There is other motorsports. We don't talk about those. But congratulations, by the way, to Guy Wilkes on sorting out a program for World Rallycross this year. We don't really talk a lot about Rallycross these days, but Guy is a friend of the show, and maybe we will get him on. Let us know if you want to hear what Guy's got to say, because it's always interesting. By all means, give us a shout. But first story this week, I'm gonna come to it. It's something that I suppose we spoke about last week. Tommy Mäkinen. This could be the best. This could be the WRC's best ever year.
Yeah, we've got David Evans has been a busy man and spoke to a lot of the team principals, a lot of the drivers, even some of the co-drivers. Nicholas Gilsall's mentioned in the piece this week, but yeah, just a bit of a piece to say, you know, some of the thoughts of the team principals are all very excited about how exciting the year is going to be, and yeah, we've kind of spoke to them and got their words on it.
Right, I think it's fair to say. I think we mentioned it probably towards the end of last year, and I think Martin Holmes, when he was on as a guest as well, mentioned that this has kind of been the first time that everybody started from kind of ground zero with that clean sheet of paper with cars, hasn't it?
Since I guess the introduction of World Rally Cars anyway 20 years ago, but it's interesting when there's a complete mix-up, isn't it? We've talked about it several times on the show, particularly not just having a mix-up but taking the dominant player out of it. So you know, we expected it to be an open year, and it's proving to be that.
No, I think we said it last week. It's still all up in the air. Nothing is still kind of nobody is decided now. A couple of people got a little bit excited on social media when we were talking about Jari Matti and things like that. Did you see the Jari Matti off on testing, Ryan?
I did see it. He seemed to be going a little bit quick into that corner, and it fell over. I also saw Yari's response that the media dissect things too much, and that it was only a small role, and he carried on testing.
Which is fair dues. Jack, did you see that little bit of footage?
I did. I was amazed at how well the Toyota stood up to it, because it, you know, had a proper, well, I wouldn't call it a high speed roll, but it was, you know, he wasn't going slowly, and the car rolled over, sat back up, and I think they got going again for a short period of time. So, you know, pretty impressive at how sort of robust the Toyota was.
Now, I only seen it from afar, but the reason why I'm asking, and it doesn't sound that important, but right, I was surprised that from afar that rear spoiler didn't look like it completely disintegrated.
we kept saying that before the start of the year. Surely all these aerodynamic bits are going to fall off, particularly off the Toyota. And so far, they seem to be pretty well glued on, don't they?
Yeah, I don't know whether they glued them on, whether they nailed them on, whether they got a nail gun. I don't know, but I was surprised, because I must admit, when I seen the roll, that was the first thing I looked for. Sounds quite depressing, really.
Nah, it's definitely super glue. Yeah, it's that really strong super glue, the type that sticks your fingers together.
Right, okay, there you go. Jack, you see, that's why Ryan's here, because he tells us stuff that you and I just wouldn't know like that. Anyway, there you go.
I'm convinced that it's actually a frying pan. I think it's shaped like it is, so that when he crashes, he can cook himself an egg.
It's an interesting one. I went with an ironing board at one point, and then I went with a surfboard. But I've never, ever looked at it and thought, that's a kitchen utensil. Interesting angle, Jack. Only you could come up with that, Jack. But again, you're the creative one out of all of us. That's why you're here as well. It's a bit like a really poor boy band. I don't know where I fall into this. Obviously, Rye's got the facts and the figures and everything else. You've got the quiff and you've got the imagination. I don't know what I bring to the party. Possibly a ball spot, but there you go. FIA.
The comedy.
Hey. FIA looks to create constructors class, Jack. Is this following on from this kind of AP4 kind of R4 conversation we had? Is this following on from there, perhaps?
I think it's more aimed at the top class in the WRC, and they're looking to sort of open things up a little bit and provide a bit more of a competitive sort of team championship really at the top. I think that's the idea behind it. Maybe I don't know if Ryan, if you've managed to read the story yet, and if you've managed to read anything into it, you probably provide a good insight into this, I would have thought.
Yeah, I have read it. I guess we'll have to see where this one expands to, because at the minute it's not easy to see where it's going to go. I mean, there isn't a queue of private teams trying to build a world rally car, is there at the minute? It's all based around manufacturer teams at the minute. M Sport's the one exception where they have become a constructor, but that's very much based around the Ford entry initially. So. I'm just not quite sure how this one's going to develop just yet, because like I said, the cars are very much developed around a manufacturer at the minute, either officially or unofficially. So to privately develop a World Rally car, firstly, is going to be incredibly costly. Or are we wanting to see private teams running X Works cars, which obviously we've seen before with Munchies and Stobarts, etc. But then, Where's the budget coming from for those teams? If there was teams out there with that budget, like the adapters of this world, then surely they're already there. So I'm just not 100% sure where this one is going just yet.
Right, I'm not even convinced of that. I think there's, you think about Munchies and Stobarts and stuff. That was all obviously running the M Sport banner, wasn't it? So there's always going to, you can effectively go to M Sport and say, right, I want to call myself Peter Pan Rallying. And they'll go, yeah, fine, we'll run your program for you. So it's almost... that can happen now. I think possibly, and this is the way my interpretation of it is, what they want is effectively teams, I suppose, a bit like the Grifonis back in the day, that probably ran.
But they were always running X-Works cars, weren't they?
Yeah.
So they weren't developing their own cars. They weren't constructors.
No.
As such.
No. I'll take that.
I think we need a bit more substance to this story, don't we? We need to know exactly what they want to do and who they're aiming at, really. In terms, it's not exactly clear yet, is it, exactly what they're trying to do with the future of the sport in this sense. So I think another word from Yama.
It's just that phrase constructor, because constructor, are they wanting like a McLaren or a Williams in F1 terms? But like we said, a world rally car, ultimately, you need to sell them to make money out of them. And it's such a costly thing to develop that I just can't see constructors lining up at the minute. So like you said, I think we need a little bit more clarity on what the idea is behind it.
Now, the other story following on from that, Jack, obviously, there's more coming out of the FIA with regards to, and it's funny enough, we mentioned Rallycross right at the top, and Manfred Stoll, who got involved with doing an electric powered RX car, and hybrids or electric power are at least 5 years away for the World Rally Championship.
Yeah, interesting one this, isn't it? And I think we've seen so many words about Rallycross, as you said earlier, so many discussions about when they'll switch to electric or if they'll switch to electric and how that will fit into things. We've seen an electric Rallycross car built already. It's got about 500 brake, I think, and it's quite competitive, built by Manfred Stoll. So they seem to be quite close to being able to introduce it if they wanted to. I'm not convinced we're quite there in rallying yet, and there's a few more implications to consider in terms of rallying. We have to go quite far afield, so we need the cars to be able to do the mileage, the road mileage, over the course of the weekend, so that needs to be considered. The other thing I think is safety. I mean, if we've got electric cars flying down the stage, then how do spectators know that the cars are coming and can move out of the way and that sort of thing? So there's a lot to be taken to the drawing board and a lot to happen yet, and we've got 5 years to kind of see that happen, I suppose.
Right, can I ask you a question on this? And this, I'm either going to sound like I know what I'm talking about or completely and utterly like a lunatic, but there's the electric-powered BMW coupe. Is it the i8 or something like that?
It's the i8.
Doesn't that have speakers to create an engine sound?
I don't know on that one exactly, but it does have, because that has a small petrol engine as well. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's certainly technology that exists, and some of the manufacturers are looking at, because we've got a lot of road cars out there now that amplify sound or create a slightly different sound. I mean, if you drive a Renault Sport Clio nowadays, you can make it sound like a V6 Clio, not very convincingly, but in my opinion. but you can do that. So that does exist. But fake sounds for a competition car. Not sure about that one.
No, me neither. Me neither. I remember having a conversation with someone about the i8. That's all. And basically, they had speakers on every corner, I think it was, and something in the car as well. By all means, folks, tweet me in and put me straight. @absolute_rally, or tweet me directly and mock me about it at @TonySimpson74. But anyway, cracking on. Where are we going next? So where we're going to go? We're going to go to Calais Rovanpera. That's where we're going to go next.
Fantastic.
There you go.
Ryan, can you applaud? I haven't got enough hands, but I'm sure Ryan's got a couple free. So
no, I just, that's great. You know, was he named after a town in northern France? I'm not sure.
Possibly. It's a very good way of remembering his first name, if you think about that northern town in northern France.
It is. Yeah, I thought so, actually. Yeah.
Absolute genius. But anyway, Jack, could you just tell us a little bit about this? Well, he made history on Saturday, by all accounts. Just tell us a little bit about this.
He did. He's the youngest ever winner of a Finnish rally championship event after, you know, we spoke a little bit last week after the story and I learned about Calais being given special permission to compete in the Finnish championship this year. He's too young to compete by their rules, but their governing body has allowed him in and given him a special permit to compete this year, and you know he's won the first event, and there's some pretty decent guys competing as well. So to beat off the competition he did and to win a Finnish championship round is pretty spectacular at the age of 16, and it's setting him up nicely for the rest of the year.
Right, when we've got, you know, dare I say, child prodigies like this, and we see it in other sports and everything else, What's the line here? And I know I kind of asked you the same question a few weeks ago, but I'm kind of a little bit nervous because obviously, you know, he's just gone out. He's now won this. He's 16 years old. You know, you would think that maybe a team's going to be looking at him already. Is that fair? Or is it just going to be his management company just finding him budget for the next few years? Well, how do you see this panning out?
I'm sure teams will be keeping an eye on his progress, you know, and the fact that you know, Timo Jokke is involved in the whole thing as well. I'm sure that he's making sure the teams are aware of it. Like you say, it's the sport is is it changing? I mean, we obviously saw Mikkelsen, then we saw World Rally cars when they were 17, but this is a bit of a change to see Calais Rovanpera in a car even younger, you know, when he can't even drive a car on the road. So we are seeing drivers in cars very young. But yeah, like I said, we've seen it before with all the top drivers. So, you know, I think this is a chance, or should I say, it's a situation where you've got a young driver with the opportunity to be in a top line car, which doesn't always happen. But God, he's making the most of it, and you know, we're talking about him week on week, and you know, that was a big step to go into the Finnish Championship, and clearly he wasn't daunted by it. So good on him, and you know, I'm sure everybody following his progress closely.
Jack, there must be the level of trust that must be place that this young man's kind of feet now, you know, out in a new R5 car. Obviously it's a proper team running it and everything else. I think Tony Gardemeister's team run it. I think it's TGS that run the car for them. You know, this isn't playing games. This is what probably half, probably two thirds, four fifths, whatever fraction you want to go for, young drivers would be crying out for this opportunity. He seems to be just taking it in his stride, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, you've hit the nail on the head with the last sentence you said there. He's taken it in his stride. He's proven each level that he's competed at that he's good enough to take the next step. You know, he's not just been thrown into an R5 car because daddy's got a couple of quid. You know, he's driven a, you know, drove the Starlet, didn't he, in that famous first YouTube video when he was 7 or 8 years old. Drove the C2 very, very, very well, and then stepped into the S2000 Skoda. And if you've not seen the video of him testing the S2000 Skoda for the first time, then that's definitely definitely worth a watch because you can see straight away that he's just got that natural knack for car control, and the car's flowing beautifully, and he's, everything's perfectly calm in the cockpit, and he's under control. But you know, the situation he's got into at the minute is we've got this massive buzz, and as Ryan said there, we're talking about it week on week. The situation you're going to get is that the manufacturers are going to be queuing up to take him because of the interest that he's drawn, and you know, every driver in a work seat is employed for some percentage is down to representing a manufacturer or pleasing a sponsor, and they've got to bring something commercially to the table, and Callie's doing that at the minute, isn't he? And you know, he's certainly proven that he can drive the car, but he's also proven that he can drum up this sort of commercial aspect as well, which is going to be really attractive to manufacturers and even some privateer teams as well, to a certain extent.
Yeah, well put. Not a young man. Well, he is a young man. He's a young man compared to me anyway. Sébastien Ogier conducted his first proper gravel test after that very first introduction to the Fiesta, a World Rally car in deepest, darkest Wales, when he was still making his mind up where he was going, Jack. But he's finally had some proper test Ks getting ready for Rally Mexico.
Absolutely, yeah, and he's stated it as one of the most important test sessions of the season. So he's really putting a lot on this one, and talking about wanting to make the car as fast as possible can, as you would probably expect from a driver who wants to win the World Championship. But yeah, no, good to see him out on the test, and yeah, it's the first time these guys are going to be driving these cars on gravel properly, and in a run up to an event and also on the event. So it's going to be really interesting to see where they're all at, and these test sessions are really important in terms of setting the car up and making sure everything's ready to go in Mexico and making sure that the cars are absolutely ready.
This is Absolute Rally, Case Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good news agents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Case Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. Now, I just want to fast forward, or kind of go backwards rather. Last week, Ryan, we were talking about R5s, the competitive R5s, and why Peugeot had perhaps gone back to European Championship in order to maybe move some metal. And I think it was you said the high-end I has probably leaped ahead of it now. And you know, we've been waiting for a private team, certainly in the UK and Ireland, to take one. And a young man, Robert Barrowbell's got one. Of course, Robert's been around for a good few years. He's rallied Skodas and stuff in the past. He was very quick in the C2s and things like that. But he's took the plunge and they've acquired one of these I20 R5 cars.
Yeah, and that's going to be exciting to see a Hyundai in Ireland. You know, we've started to see the Fiesta, particularly with the Evo kit, be the car of choice for R5. But now we're seeing a little bit of a swing with the Skodas becoming more and more popular, and now Robert taking the Hyundai. So it'll be really interesting to see how that gets on, and I'm sure if it proves successful, then it'll it'll certainly increase the interest about the car. Obviously with the family having a Hyundai dealer, etc., it makes commercial sense for them, but I think there'll be a lot of people watching thinking, well, how competitive is that car, how good's it going to be, and I think there'll be a lot of people keen to see how he gets on in it.
Jack, I think obviously you're the one who's normally up to date on these things. Are we going to be seeing this in the British Rally Championship this year?
We won't be seeing Roberts in the British Championship, I don't think. I'm fairly sure Roberts he's been quite truthful in what he says, in that he wants to get the car set up and win an event in the Irish Starlight Championship before he looks at doing anything else. I think he was taken aback by the pace of the championship in Galway, which he did a few weeks ago in a Fiesta. So I think he's well aware of, you know, how quick and how sort of on the pace those boys are in Ireland at the minute, and he knows that to get to where they are, I need to do a lot of work, the setup of the car, especially with it being new, and working on the car quite a lot. So I think he'll be spending most of his time in Ireland. But you know, fingers crossed, we'll get one in the British Championship. But to be honest, I can't see any takers for any of the guys we've seen this year taking Hyundai. I think the guys we've seen in the Championship this year who are returning will all stick to the same machinery. So I think it'll be a while before we'll see one in the British Championship unless there's some sort of one-off coming up.
You say they're all sticking to the same machinery, but of course we've got a guest coming up a little bit later on the programme. We're going to have Frederick Arlen on the programme a little bit later on. Frederick has changed, he's changed not only his machinery, he's changed tyres as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Frederick Ireland's returning to the championship, although, you know, he did state at the end of last year that, you know, that wasn't his plan. He was going to do the European Championship, but he's elected to come back to the BRC, and he's got unfinished business with the championship. He's not happy with where he finished last year. He ended up fourth. I think with a better out of man the last round, he probably could have finished second. So, you know, he really feels like he's got unfinished business. Only person to beat Elvin Evans on a gravel round last year in the BRC, so clearly got the pace. He's competed in WRC too as well, so I definitely think Frederick's got to be the favourite for the championship, and the CA1 team has switched to D-Max tyres for this year, so they'll be switching from Pirelli to the D-Max, and obviously Elvin took the title with the D-Max last year, so it'd be interesting to see how they go in Frederick and David Burley's hands as well, who's also competing in the team as well.
Right, a man you know well, of course, Martin Wilkinson, the man behind CA1, it's well documented, of course, his background over the years and everything else before he started CA1. I think if I was in dreamland and I was going anywhere and I was going to a private team to run my program and have a man run it for me, I don't think I'd think of anyone better than Martin, really.
No, I mean, CA1 Sport's now become a very professional team. They have a very professional look in the service park, and actually one that other teams, I think, aspire to now. And Martin obviously has built up a little bit of knowledge of the Skoda over the last couple of years. Obviously, they ran David Borgish car last year, and I'm sure that he's influenced Frederick's decision to go with the Skoda, just seeing that as a more complete package. Frederick showed great speed last year, and I'm sure he's going to be a contender this year. So it's good because, like we just said, that there was a lot of fiestas around last year, and as much as we like the fiesta, it's nice to see a little bit of a mix of machinery.
Absolutely. Now, boys, I'm kind of swinging around it. We are going to talk about Rally Sweden with Frederick coming up a little later on. There's a method in my madness where I'm going with this. Of course, there's been suitable outrage, Ryan Champion. I'll come to you first with regards to the concerns about the average speeds and the chicanes and the not chicanes. We got a couple of people putting us right on Twitter. I'm not too sure. Were you up to date with what was going on Twitter, on our Twitter feed? I think you were brought into a couple of conversations. Any more thoughts on this one?
Yeah, well, I saw somebody said on Twitter that there was no more chicanes than previous years. But obviously we had this situation where the second run of one particular stage in Sweden was cancelled because it was seen as too fast. It obviously had a high average speed, but it seems the stage was very straight rather than fast and flowing, and it wasn't technically fast. It was just fast in a very straight line, but I go back to what we said last week. If you're going to introduce much faster cars, you're going to get faster average stages and average speeds. You can't just suddenly turn around to organisers and say, oh, I'm sorry, we've got faster cars this year. You're going to have to find twistier stages. You know, we knew the cars were going to be substantially faster. And now to turn around and say, oh, well, they're too fast on certain stages, I think is a little bit of a short-sighted view. We could clearly see what was going to happen in terms of average speed. So I think it is a little bit of a bit unfair on organisers now to suddenly say that they should be finding twistier roads. And the last thing we want to see is more and more chicanes, because at the end of the day, that's just defeating the object. It's not making it any safer. Okay, have a chicane before maybe a dangerous corner, fine, but just having chicanes for the sake of bringing average speed down doesn't make it safer, even though it makes the average speed slower. So nobody wants to see unnecessary chicanes. And I just think we wanted more exciting cars. We've got more exciting cars. So let's let them run.
Jack, we had a couple, as I say, we had a couple of back and forth where Tor André Borson and Jean Michael as well, who was tweeting us throughout a couple of days after the podcast, after it went out. I think obviously Ryan's just nailed his hat on there a little bit, but I think everybody's left with the same confusion what Ryan's just expressed there. Why are we here? Why has this happened? I think you correctly pointed out last week, this technology now, they can drive the stages and know what the average speeds are going to be.
Yeah, it's I can go a step further than that, as what Ryan said there. And, you know, for me, Ryan, completely smashed it out of the park at the end of what you were saying there. It's, you know, this is not a safety. You can't justify cancelling a stage in terms of average speed on safety. because let me give you a hypothetical circumstance. You've got a stage and it's a straight line. There's nothing lining the route. It's completely open. You'd say the chances of crashing are 10%. You've got literally a straight route. The drivers go from first to fifth gear and they're 120 kilometres an hour and then they stop. And their average speed is 90 miles an hour, 100 miles an hour, because they've just done a straight line. And then you put them through a stage in Finland where they're going to average sort of 75, 80 miles an hour, but the corners are all sort of 60, 70 miles an hour jumps, lined with trees, the speeds are high, cars are unpredictable, you're not quite sure how the car's going to move around on the stage, you've got slippery gravel, all that kind of stuff. Which stage is safer, the one that was 130 miles an hour in average speed or the one that was 75 miles an hour in average speed? Yeah. Is the straight line safer or are the corners safer? You know, average speed is not a way of justifying safety. It just isn't. I will not accept that from anyone. No one can tell me that's a justification for.
You must have been reading Andrew Thomas, who dropped us a lovely message by the way on Facebook. Appreciate the message. Yeah, Andrew Thomas from Netherlands. Quoting here, this seems bloody stupid. Average speeds are immaterial anyway, aren't they? If you have a quick stage with a chicane on, it's only going to be slow at that point. Not only this, but wide, straight, fast, open stages are less of a danger than narrow, twisty stages. WRC is being made a mockery of again. So that was following on from the story that you guys ran on Autosport there. But what was I going to say to you? So, yeah, I suppose it's going to be interesting now, I guess. What's El Chocolat, Brian, Mexico, isn't that? They're going to be in the same realms again there, aren't they?
Well, we could potentially have every rally. You know, bar maybe Corsica, where you've got corners every 50 metres. But I just find it quite frustrating because we wanted more exciting cars, or let's say the governing body wanted more exciting cars. Let's not forget that the whole regulation change came from the FIA. Whether we debate the rights or wrongs of the regulation changes, they wanted more powerful, more exciting cars. That's what they've got. And now they're saying, oh, well, we don't want them going too fast. I just do not understand this one.
Yeah.
Can I add just something very quickly to that, Tony, as well? I've heard a few people saying, the 2017 cars are new and, we don't know how quick they're going to be, et cetera, et cetera. And, I accept that. That's absolutely fine. You can't harness data that you haven't got. So trying to predict how fast the 2017 car is going to go through a stage is more difficult. But if you look back through the last two rallies that we've had and look at Stefan Febbre and Craig Green's times in 2016 cars, they've been close to the 80 miles an hour limit on certain stages as well. We're not just looking at, this is not just a specific to the 2017 cars. Lefebvre and Breen have been fairly close to the pace as well. And if you look at their times, maybe not as quick as the 2017 cars, but they're getting there. They're not far off.
I was just going to say, just to back that up, Jack, as well, this year's cars aren't night and day quicker than last year's cars. It's not like they're 3 seconds a mile quicker or something. They are quicker, but last year's cars were also very quick.
This is Absolute Rally. Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from Clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good news agents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally, and we've had a tweet in, and I almost feel like we need a section called Ask Ryan. What do you reckon, Jack? I've got somebody tweeted in, and to be fair, I did tweet on our behalf or all our behalfs that Ryan was a little bit busy when he was tweeting.
This isn't about the colour of socks.
No, it's not about the colour of socks and what side I dress on. No, nothing to do with that at all. This is from Twitter follower called Bogni, if the new WRCs were to use the old and narrower spec winter tyres in Sweden, would they have even more grip, Ryan Champion?
Yes, definitely. The old narrow WRC tyres, the 16-inch tyres with more studs were incredible and gave a significant amount of increased grip over the current tyres. So yes, if they went back to the old spec tyres, they would be a lot faster again.
There you go. You see, that's all you got to do. Tweet us in, folks, and we'll ask Ryan, because Ryan will know. Right, moving on, boys. A couple of other little bits and pieces. Can we do some fun stuff? can we do some fun stuff before we carry on with what we should be doing, as it were? The reason why I say do fun stuff, right, is because a little bit behind the curveball here, so to speak. If you do download our podcast via iTunes, by the way, you can leave us a review, and 5-star reviews do help us, believe it or not. Not that I'm pleading for them, but please, 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 if you do download us via iTunes, leave us some 5-star reviews. We've had some 5-star reviews, and I only found them the other day, and that's me bad, by the way. But this is from Simon Trilby, and it's entitled Absolute Bengians. I love this podcast. All the latest rally news and bits of banter, usually really interesting guests as well. There you go. Brian Fenton, Absolute Rally keeps me up to date with the world of rally and the World Rally Championship. And it talks about other stuff as well. And it's always helpful while I'm traveling somewhere or just sorting out my laundry. Absolute Rally, a must for all rally fans. 5 stars. Keep it real. This podcast gets better and better. It's absolutely the best podcast of its kind. Keep up to date with WRC, British Rally Championship, rallying from all four corners of the world. Inside information on drivers and teams. Also guests holding you from within the sport. There you go. I really appreciate that, folks. If you do download us via iTunes, if you give us a 5-star review, it does help us with advertising and things like that. But still, there you go. I thought I've never done that before. I just thought I'd do something a little bit left field. Boys, I've got some other little bits of housekeeping to do. Jack, have you got on any other business for this week? Are you ready with yours? Okay. Yeah. Ryan, have you got one for this week? Okay. I'm going to save mine till last. Okay. We're not quite going to do it yet. A couple of things I want to mention. Jack, we're going to have to talk about it. We're going to have to talk about Ryan Champion's near triumphant return in his X-Works Evo. You and I were excited.
Yeah.
We were tweeting and everything else. And then he clipped the bail, lost rear wheel drive, and lost the win.
Can I just point out those two weren't connected?
That's not what Jack Bengian told me the other day. He said he had somebody on the spot, right?
No. Yeah, there you go. It wasn't me who said it, it was the person who was there.
He said he had somebody on the spot, right, that basically said you clipped the, and after clipping the said bail, that's when you went down to two-wheel drive. Now...
Well, it did both about happen at the same time, but clipping a bail at the front didn't cause me to lose drive at the rear, unfortunately. Are you saying
that possibly one of Jack's reporters was factually incorrect?
Well, I'm just saying that there's more coincidence in the timing than there is any physical connection.
A champion defeated as Pech completes fight back. Now, I think that's harsh on you, Ryan Champion, because there was no fight back there. If you had four-wheel drive, you would have won that rally, wouldn't you?
I was reasonably confident going into the last stage we were going to win the
Jack
rally,
Bengian,
yes.
Where did that headline come from?
The fight back is referring to Pech, not Champion, because Pech is the previous person mentioned. So Pech had some issues at the start of the rally and was quite a way behind after Ryan had a good start and came straight out of the blocks as he usually does, as I have hands-on experience of competing with Ryan at Croft. The fight back bit is referring to Pech. But if Ryan can close his ears for a minute, I think me and Tony are both agree that that was a pretty brilliant drive from Ryan, to be fair, and to be holding off Stephen Pech, who some people won't have noticed, is in a WRC car this year. It's not an R5 as it was last year. So for the most part, Ryan was beating a WRC car and a couple of other WRC cars and R5s and things on the event as well. So, pretty brilliant drive, and I'm sure Ryan will have some more insight.
I agree. For 10 seconds, I'll go, I was quietly confident Ryan would do well. I didn't think he would lead when I looked at the opposition. I was staggered when I looked at the stage times after the first three stages, and I was gutted for him when I got to the end of the rally and I realised what had happened.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought the top three was on there, to be fair. And I don't know what Ryan was expecting before the event, but given the fact that the car's basically a Group N car of the B13 engine, isn't it, Ryan? I think a podium would have been, a good result. But yeah, just it's so hard, isn't it, when the result gets given to you and you're expecting it, and then it gets taken away, even though you might not have been expecting to win the event. It's much harder when you've been leading and then it's taken away, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I have to say, before the rally, like you said, looking at the cars around, that realistically are probably 10 times the value of the Mitsubishi. I didn't expect I certainly didn't expect to be able to win. Obviously, you hope that you can fight for it, but we had a misfire through the morning that despite the good stage times, I mean, it held us back quite significantly on a couple of stages. But that's exactly it. When you're in a position to win the rally and you know that you just need a good clean run through the last stage, that was unfortunate. I have to say the chicane that we did clip, it was we were pulling, I think, something like 127-128 miles an hour down the straight to it, and then there was a chicane over a crest that you couldn't see, and you had to brake on the grass. And it didn't stop very well on the grass. Stephen had just slithered past the side of it, I believe. We hit the bale. The car behind did as well. And then I saw some on board this morning of something like car 5, and there wasn't much of a chicane left by then. So everybody else had a clean run through that. But it was actually braking for that chicane. The rear cross member had been banging a little bit on the previous stage, and I tried to take it a little bit easy, but it broke under braking for that chicane, and reduced us to front wheel drive. And unfortunately, the sort of a lot of the remaining 3 miles was steep uphill, and a front wheel drive Evo doesn't work very well, I can tell you that much.
All that upset, and you had to spend a day listening to Craig Coley. I mean, your day couldn't have been much worse, would it, really?
Is Craig back in the sun now? Is he jetted off now? Yeah, I thought he might.
Yeah, Craig's disappeared back to the sun, you know, but he's obviously, and recently co-drove for Stig Blomqvist as well, so you know, he could tell me all about that one. But Craig did my first rally with me, which was scarily enough 25 years ago, and we did the very same bit of stage as we did on my first rally 25 years ago. An MG Maestro.
No, it's in the workshop. No, it's in the workshop.
It is.
Fully restored.
All right, well, listen, before we crack on, it's Race Retro this coming weekend. The blue machine's out this weekend, isn't it? Right,
it is. You've moved on to my new other business.
Okay, well, all right, well, we'll come back to that. Let's do Jack's any other business.
No, you might have any business now.
No, I'll tell you what I'm going to do with you before you do any other business. I will do it in the right order. Okay, I want to mention Pace Notes magazine. Of course, without them, we wouldn't be here today. Now, they've got an excellent edition out this month, and it is all about, it's called the Escort Edition, and it could be completely misconstrued, but it's about cars, just in case you've got any shadow of a doubt in your mind. It's about any other type of Escort. But it's about your favourite Escorts. Martin Holmes has wrote about, and he's talking about his experiences in co-driving in Escorts, and everybody's kind of got a favorite Escort, and everyone kind of goes on about the Mark 1 and the Mark 2 and stuff like that, both of which I really, really liked. But I go completely left field with my favorite Escorts, and I'm going to ask you two boys in a second. I've got two favorite Escorts, and for two completely different reasons. My first favorite Escort was the RS1700T, which was an obscure Escort, which was a Mark III shape Escort. And it kind of was a bit of a stillborn kind of car. Now, the reason why it was favourite for me is because my local kind of rally car spares dealer was a guy called Ian Harwood. And I hope he's still with us. I think Martin Holmes and I spoke about him along on the podcast he was on before Christmas. But on his logo, he had an RS1700T, and he did have some shells originally from somewhere. No one knows, and no one quite always knew where Ian got some of the things from. Not that I'm saying anything, but he did have an RS1700T shell, which was really, really obscure. But it was his logo. And it was a very, very special car. You don't see many of them about. And and my other one, just for the record, just purely for the noise, was the Escort World Car. I really, really like the Escort World Car, the Repsol coloured one. There you go. So I'm going to ask Ryan Champion, even though he's not really a Mark II type person, your favourite Mark II Escort?
I am an Escort fan, but I actually sat with Juha Kankinen in that very Escort World Rally Car, which was quite an experience. That was an amazing experience to sit with Kankinen, just super cool, relaxed, confident, and that was in that Repsol car. But my favourite Escort would be Ari Vatanen's 1982 British Championship car. It was an MCD car, and that's the famous black one with the white stripe, the shell car, and now owned by a man who listens to the show, Jason Lepley. Beautiful car.
And Jack's favourite Escort is a girl called Sharon. No, come on, Jack, you love a bit of history as well. What's your favourite Escort, my friend?
Well, Well, first of all, can you pull some strings so that someone at PaceMakers can send me this copy? Because I'd love to hear about
I will get you a copy sent.
Fantastic. Yeah. Big Ford man, and you know, my granddad was a foreman at the Quicks Garage in Chester and serviced Roger Clark's car and people like that, so he's got a lot of hands-on experience dealing with some of the escorts from when GB went through there. I think my favourite sort of older escort would be the 81 Rothmans escort that Ratnan won the championship in. That was one I saw many pictures of as a kid. I think sort of moving towards my sort of era, I think the F2 escort that Gwyn Dash drove in the response colours was awesome, made such an incredible noise, and did its best to destroy Armin Schwantz in a Celica on the Manx, and you know, some real good performances from Gwyn Dash in that car, and I definitely remember that one flying around the lanes and things like that in Ireland, so that'd be a big one for me. And I think it might have been the media day in the late 90s I got to sit in the Simonite's sort of lesser spec escort, the white one with the Ford Motorsport on the side. So that kind of shape escort has always been one of my favourites. If I had to pick a modern one, I'd probably go with Frank Kelly's Baby Blue from Ireland, because that's incredible to watch, and some great videos of that online, and Frank's a bit of a nutter behind the wheel, and his co-drivers usually are as well, and they make for some brilliant onboard.
Fantastic. No, you're right. Folks, if you're an escort fan, pick up this month's magazine. It is absolutely epic. Honestly, I was so excited when it arrived. Anyway, listen, we're going to go to any other business now. We'll go to Rise. We'll do it. We've just been heard from Jack. We'll go to Rise. Rise, any other business?
Well, as you've already mentioned, it is Race Retro this weekend. So the one of the foremost historic motorsport shows at Stormley, just near Warwick. And as you also said, I'm moving from the red corner to the blue corner this weekend. So taking the 555 Subaru to do some skids on the live stage. But what's really exciting for me is that we've got some of some rallying royalty there in some fantastic cars. So Ari Vatanen is there driving amongst other things. A ProDrive M3. He drove one on the Thousand Lakes Rally a good few years ago now, sponsored by Milk. He was a famous promoter of milk and drunk milk on the podium instead of champagne, and he was sponsored by Milk on the Thousand Lakes. But he's back out in an M3 on the live stage, which will be spectacular to see, alongside Marco Allen in a ProDrive Legacy. So if you're not doing anything on Saturday or Sunday, get yourself to the live rally stage, because there's going to be some spectacular cars, not just the Group A cars like those, but a full range of the Group B cars, and also some Group 4 cars, more modern cars as well. So I think there's something like 80 cars on the live stage this year. So a huge range of cars and some spectacular
Harry
drivers.
And who also puts a forward through to this month's Pace Notes magazine, and Riley's wrote the forward for it as well, still has got my favourite quote that we've ever broadcast on our Absolute Rally podcast, which was last Autosport last year, and we spoke to him, and he did a great piece with us, and the quote was, "I express my joy for life through the steering wheel." Boom. Boom. Deal.
Can I have an exclusive? Can I have an Absolute Rally exclusive to run in your business? This is absolutely exclusive. This is, I don't think anyone knows this, or if they do, I'll be surprised. David Lowen is also one of the people who's on the live stage at Stoneleigh, and he's a quite a frequent visitor, and drove a 555 Subaru like yours, right, last year. This year he's going to be driving a 308 Mitchell Otto Group 4 car on the stages, so you're going to see David Lowen in a Ferrari, which is going to be pretty spectacular.
Fair play. There you go. Jack, you're any other business?
My annual business is taken from one of the nicest men in motorsport, and a very, very able journalist called Paul Lawrence. And if you don't know Paul, he's our historic editor, and then loves his rallying, and the Isle of Man's one of his places to be, and favourite places to be in the world. He's always there and covers the British Historic Rally Championship for us. Now, you know, we've spoken a lot about events on Absolute Rally over the past few months, and how events should look, and the cost of rallying in Britain, that kind of thing. Paul's written a column this week in MN, which I really urge you to go and buy. If you need any extra incentive to buy MN this week, we've got our national rally calendar in it, so you can tick off all your dates and make sure you're at all the events you want to be at. That's the public service announcement over part of the any good business anyway. But Paul suggested in his call this week that maybe front wheel drive rallies are the way to go, and I'm starting to buy into his argument actually, because he's written a fantastic column explaining a little bit about what the sort of movement is, and there's a category one historic cars that are not able to compete in the UK at the minute because the roads are too rough and they're historic, the parts are too difficult to get hold of, they're very expensive to repair and that kind of thing. But also, you know, we've got a few big rallies where it's really difficult to drive around at the back, and the roads are really rutted. So, you know, front wheel drive rallies specifically might be the way to go. Just front wheel drive 1400 cars and historic rear wheel drive cars as well. So I just wanted to put that forward to you guys and see what
you thought. That was something that happened about 2006, 2007. Basically, when BTRDA, which is a National Gravel Championship here in the UK, the 1400 section of that was huge, and you know, a lot of drivers went through it. The likes of Bogey and people like that all went through it. Very, very quick drivers. Jave Waldencroft went through, of course, who ended up in a work Suzuki, and you know, there was lots of quick boys. And but basically, they brought in a control tire, and which upset pretty much 2/3 of the 1400 runners. I don't know if you remember this, right? But basically, they voted with the feet. And now many say that was the beginning of the demise of 1400s rallying in this country, which had become such a big thing because 1400s ran at the front of the field as well. And a guy called Nick Thornton, who was a co-driver to Neil Weaver, who, if you know, Neil also was a very quick driver, by the way, in a Corsa. And you also see him now working for the likes of Ken Skidmore and people like that, a very capable engineer as well. And his co-driver set up the 1400 club, and they did actually run an event or two, which was just just for front wheel drive rally cars. And it just didn't quite gather the pace that I think they wanted to do with it. And, again, having done the coverage for historic, I used to present some of the historic TV programs, a few years back now. And, you know, the Cat 1 cars, you know, are minis and things like that. And the reality is you don't want to put a mini at the back of a field through stages even that we have to deal with, right? You know, it is, you know, that announcement, the seeding issue, which we all know why it was brought in, is absolutely annihilated small front wheel drive car rallying.
Yeah, it has. It's definitely had an unfortunate effect. You know, we saw, like you said, some of the less powerful cars or the rare historic cars getting the best of the conditions. And as we know, when you put four wheel drive cars through a stage, you put world rally cars through a stage, such as their traction and the lines that you can take in those sort of cars, that they do dig the road up. And we saw good entries for some of these classes when they had it first on the road. And, you know, I'm still not convinced that this running order has really helped any particular issue. And it's an unfortunate byproduct of that change. Yeah.
Anyway, a great piece. And as I say, I've worked with Paul Lawrence as well. A great guy and very informative. So, yeah, check out his piece in this week's MN. My any other business, boys? Now, Jack's either going to go, yeah, I know this anyway, or Ryan's either going to know this anyway. I'm going to ask you first, Jack. Don't answer. Just say yes or no. Do you know the story behind the registrations of the cars for M Sport this year?
No.
Ryan Champion,
Yes, I do.
Of course you do. God, I wanted 2 out of 2. 1 out of 2.
It's registrations, isn't it? The car registration. Rally car registrations.
Yeah,
of course.
All right. Well, let's educate Jack. Okay. WRT1 and WRT2, Jack, are actually owned by a company called W.R. Tulloch and Sons, and they're a Ford dealer on the Orkney Islands, and they also have rights to sell the Mustang, believe it or not, on the Orkney Islands. And they approached M Sport when they signed the deal with OJ and everything else, said, would you like to use our registration numbers? And that's where they come from. So they're on loan from a Ford dealership on the Orkney Islands.
Something new, I didn't know.
There you go. I was hoping, right, you were going to give me, wow, that's really good. I know it wasn't quite as good as Rise last week, but I was quite happy with that. And you've just kind of went,
That would have been well worth it.
No, it's good. I'm very impressed.
Jack, I feel cheap. It's just an afterthought, that now.
No. I'm impressed. Yeah, you didn't give me a Van Muller, so I'm not that impressed. But yeah, I was very good. I'm very impressed. I'm sorry I didn't give you the correct reaction.
Right? Does that sound the flattest excitement ever, or is it just me being precious?
Well, let's just say suppressed it very
didn't
well.
Didn't he just? Folks, I think that's it. Have you got anything you want to get off your chest? Anything more, Jack, before we let you go?
No, that's good, thank you.
Jack's very happy. That's all right, as long as Jack's happy. You're off to Race Retro this weekend, I'm guessing?
Yeah, I am, yes. I'm very looking forward to it. I'm going to be there on Saturday, so looking forward to meeting all the guys there and saying hello to Ryan.
I'm not too sure whether I'm going to be able to get there yet. There's a few things going on, and I'm hoping to be getting there, but I might not be able to get there because I'm doing something else which would be featured on the podcast the following weekend, and I can't talk about it yet. So there you go. Anyway, I may be there, but if not, two of the boys will be there. If you do see them, by all means, go and say hello. Don't say hello to Rye if he's flat and fifth. He probably won't see you, and if he does see you, it's never going to end well. And just go over and just rub Jack on the top of the head because he likes that. He likes that. There you go. Same time, same place next week, Jack.
There
you go. Bri, same time, same place next week for you.
Absolutely, I'll be here.
But Jack's going to be back with us anyway after the break. I'd just like to just have a little bit of a play with him. Jack and myself will be back after the break. I'm going to be talking to Frederick Arlen, who we were talking about a little bit earlier in the podcast.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports. From Clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good news agents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Your number one monthly rally read. This is Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. The man we were talking about probably early on in the podcast this week was Frederick Arlen, who now finally joins us on the line with me and Jack. Frederick, hello.
Hello.
How are you? Well?
Yes, definitely. I'm in the north of Sweden. Snow is falling and all okay.
Well, you sound, as ever, you sound happy, you sound chilled. And is there a tinge of excitement now your program's been announced?
Yeah, for sure. It's been loads of hard work from after Wales up until actually last week to secure all the different sponsorships and deals and get a new car, and all of these things takes more time than you maybe can think. So yeah, really happy that everything is now in place.
Has it been an easy deal to do? I don't mean from the financial side, but obviously you worked with CA1 last year. You've worked with Martin Wilkinson as well, and we both, Ryan and I, were talking about this, and Jack earlier in the podcast. There's not many people who you'd kind of want to entrust your program to outside of maybe the professional works teams. There's no one much better really than Martin Wilkinson.
No, that's for sure. I mean, I've worked with Martin since 2014, and yeah, we have had loads of success together, and I feel really comfortable with him. So on that point of view, choosing my team and choosing actually the championship this year was quite easy. I really think the BRC is a good championship and has a good coverage for all my partners. So those things were easy, but then, the financial point of view, as you said, and also getting the car was quite a hard work, but okay, all in place now.
I think we all wanted to see you come back, of course, because you were the only person really to take the fight to Elven on gravel at times last year, and we wanted to see somebody like yourself come back to our championship. The transition from the R5 Fiesta to the R5 Skoda, have you done anything yet in the Skoda?
I have actually not done anything at all with the Skoda. I will do a 2-day, maybe even 3-day test here in Sweden on snow and ice, because it's a good place to start just getting comfortable with the car and playing with the setup. But from a point of view, getting the car in my liking, I feel very comfortable. I mean, as you said, I have Martin, which has loads of experience, both from the Skoda but also from rallying generally. I will have my own damper guy from Sweden, which has been doing my dampers for my whole career, even on the Fiesta. So I know that we will get a car which is are going to be quick, and I will like it quite quickly, I hope anyway.
Good man. I know Jack's got plenty he wants to ask you as well. Jack's sat there very patiently. Go on, Jack.
I love my questions, as you all know. Frederick, great to have you back in the BRC this year. I think it's going to be a really interesting year, isn't it? But I think the thing I'm most interested to see is I think the guys who knew you coming into the championship last year kind of knew you were going to be there or thereabouts on the gravel, but the tarmac was a complete question mark, wasn't it, coming into last year? You'd not competed in a four-wheel drive car on tarmac before. So how do you feel sort of last year bedded you in for that? Because I think, you know, you were really quick on the two tarmac rounds that we had, and I think you must feel quite positive going into this year, you know, the fact that you've had that opportunity to do a bit of tarmac driving now.
Yeah, I mean, it gives me a much more relaxed feeling ahead of the season, because last year we knew, okay, we need to more or less win or be second at least on all the gravel events, because I had no idea how my tarmac pace was going to be, but apparently that worked out quite well. I mean, especially it felt like we got all the pieces together in Isle of Man, and we were doing really good times, even though we were suffering together with Mark Higgins with the short ratio on the quick stages. So I actually think we had a really good progression on the tarmac last year, and for sure also this year we do one event less in Ireland, which is going to be Ypres, and I think Ypres is not, I think it's going to suit me better than maybe the Irish tarmac specialist. So also on that point of view, I think the championship looks even better for me from a rally point of view.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you mentioned Ypres briefly there. You know, that, tell our listeners a little bit about that, because that's some people might not know, but that's an event you've done before, isn't it?
Yeah, that's an event I've done before, and it's a little bit actually similar to, let's say, Isle of Man, or anyway, sections of Isle of Man where we did really well. It's quite smooth, fast sections with loads of cut, and you really need to trust your pace notes. And yeah, Ypres is a rally which I like the high speed. I think we showed that already on the Pirelli rally, that when we have the high speed rallies, that's when I feel comfortable. When you have the narrow, tricky sections of like Ulster, then it was a bigger struggle. So for sure, swapping Circuit Island to Ypres, for me, myself, is a positive thing to have a bigger chance of the title.
Sure. And finally for me, Frederick, you mentioned briefly just coming back to the BRC there. Tell us a little bit more about the decision that was made there, because it's a difficult one, isn't it, as a kind of a young driver trying to prove yourself to kind of pick a championship in order to sort of pick the one that's best for you. So tell us a little bit about why you chose the BRC and what it can offer you this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think the BRC offers the same thing as the ERC, but on a little bit smaller level. So you get good coverage. You are the main class, so to say. So which means when you win the rally, you're actually the quickest guy of all on the event. WC2 is for sure the place where the quickest drivers are at the moment in the R5 cars. But it's only like Rally Sweden where I get good publicity. When you do some other events, you're just one of 5 or 10 quick WC2 cars. So that's why I'm looking more into the BRC and ERC options this year than maybe WC options.
Do you think then, Frederick, we might see a couple of ERC outings coupled with a strong BRC campaign?
Yeah, that's my plan is to, later in the year when I've gotten more comfortable in the Skoda, to go and do one or two tarmac events in the ERC, and hopefully also the season final in, I don't know how to pronounce it, but Rally Liepaja or something like that.
I'm not one for pronunciations, Frederick, trust me.
It's Rally Latvia or Rally Liepaja, I think is how you pronounce it.
Liepaja.
Yeah, something close to there. Yeah.
Exactly. That's where Frederick's going to be anyway. Look out for Frederick there.
Yeah, that's the main goal anyway. So, and also I want to do one rally in Sweden due to the commitment now with Skoda Sweden. So when we miss Rally Sweden, I want to do one event at least in Sweden also. So yeah, going to be a good program.
Can I ask you about Sweden, Fredrik? Obviously, it's an event you've done many, many times. There's been, it's been an interesting event this year due to the fact, obviously, it was the first time the 2017 cars were there. If I can ask you about those, I assume you were out having a watch?
Yeah, I was out, and really, I think one thing which has been discussed quite, or not at all, is the fact that these years, the WC cars were actually not, the difference between the WC2 cars and WC cars this year was actually smaller than last year, and it was quite a big surprise for me, to be honest. Maybe it was down to road conditions or something, I don't know, but actually the difference was smaller this year on many stages than last year, which is a big shocker for me.
Do you feel that WRC2 now is perhaps finally working? And what I mean is by that, we do have a lot of young hungry drivers like yourself, really, but you know, the likes of Timo Sunnen and all these guys and Pontus Tiedemann, you know, perhaps WRC2 in the last few years is perhaps encouraged maybe some of the more drivers perhaps who just have the budget to do it and want to go and do WRC, whereas now WRC2 is getting heavily supported by the likes of Skoda Motorsport. Obviously M Sport have got their team now, so it almost feels like it's a proper sharp end championship.
Yeah, for sure. But me personally, I think if you look at the championship, which has been the biggest for all five cars, the ERC and the WC2, if you actually look back in 3-4 years, the worst team were actually going about in the ERC, and it was more privately entered teams in the WC2. And now it actually swapped around. That's also a reason why I'm more interested in going to ERC events, because to be honest, I think all of us know that you will never get exactly the same car as a works car, and when you're already behind on material, and then you already know that, okay, you need to push even harder than the works guys, it just doesn't feel really fair. So it's good for the championship and for the guys who have the good seat, but for us who are trying to fight with these boys with a private entry card, it's not that easy,
yeah,
to be honest.
I can imagine. Can I ask you about your opinions with regards to, there's been a little bit of controversy, I think it's fair to say, after Rally Sweden, with regards to the stage being cancelled because of the high average speeds. You've just said something very, very interesting there with regards to the comparable speeds of WRC2 and even the modern, the 2017 World Car. What were your opinions on it, Frederick? Were you surprised when you seen that stage cancelled?
Yeah, I was actually really surprised, because I think you have to actually start looking at what's dangerous. Going on a straight, I don't find a very dangerous thing for a rally driver. I think that's the easiest job for us, is to push the throttle down and go straight. And I mean, the average speed just shows how many, if they would put in, let's say, 5 chicanes in that stage, they would get the average speed down, and then all of a sudden the stage is okay. I think you more need to look at what's dangerous. Yeah, the dangerous things are when you have a high average speed on a stage which is all the time going left and right with very big corners. That's when I think the dangerous is there. I mean, compare yourself to if you go off in Sweden with a snowbank and out onto a field, compared to going off at, for example, Isle of Man with a 500 meter cliff on one side. What's the most dangerous thing there? I think the average speed is a very bad way to say if a stage is dangerous or not. That's my opinion.
No, it's interesting. I completely and utterly agree, because I've scared myself many times on Isle of Man, and last year was the first time I did it without crashing. So I can relate to that.
Good for you.
I can relate to that.
Yeah. No, but I mean, I even retired on one of the quickest section on Isle of Man last year with the engine failure. And I mean, the speed the boys are coming there, and if something would break there, okay, that's going to be a big crash. In Sweden, on the other hand, I mean, As I said, it's not, for me, it's not about the average speed. The average speed is only if you have long straights and just a junction, yeah, okay, you will have high average speed. But if you have a very medium quick stage, that's maybe, it's hard to say. I anyway don't think that the average speed is the way to look if a stage is dangerous or not.
I think it has to be taken on case by case. I think you're absolutely spot on. We've just had the last question text in by our other presenter who's not with us today, Ryan Champion. And Ryan Champion's posed the question to you, Frederick, our final question before we let you go. Why does Frederick think the Skoda will be a better option this year?
I actually think that the Skoda and Forza are very evenly matched. But from what I've heard and from what I've seen on videos and things like this, the Skoda looks a little bit more stable on the high speed. And also it seems that it's been a very strong package for all different kind of surfaces. And as you guys know, we had anyway a little bit of, let's say, durability problems with my old Fiesta. So I hope this one will be nice.
Good man. Frederick, we would love to get you back after the first couple of rounds for a catch-up and see where we are. Are you good for coming back on the podcast?
I will have to take a big consideration for that one. No? Jokes aside, of course, I can do that. Yeah.
Good man. Well, listen, we'll let you get back to it. What are you doing at the moment over in Sweden? Are you just chilling, or are you working or what?
I'm working. I'm just now looking at the TTRS with 400 brake horsepower going off. So I think my guys with the tractor are going to catch him up now. So yeah, that's what I'm
good
doing.
Melissa, we'll let you get back to where. Fred, we really thank you for your time. And yeah, we appreciate you coming on Absolute Rally.
Yeah, nice to join also. So
thanks, Frederick.
Thanks, Frederick.
Thanks, boys.
All the best. Folks, you know where we live. It's Absolute_Rally on Twitter and Facebook.com/Absolute Rally. Thanks for the download.